NZ Aero Sports, Icarus Canopies, now Gyro. That's right, we've rebranded, and Gyro is our next generation. It honours our founder, as that's the name we knew him by, but Gyro also marks the start of a new chapter. And not to be biased, but it's going to be fucking epic. Long story short, we're more us than ever. So if you're new to the sport, or even a Sky God Ninja Turtle, welcome. I think our valiant leader Lucy, Gyro's daughter, says it best.
And we still got that fuck yeah attitude. Rebrand, woo!
Rebrand, woo indeed, Lucy. Anyway, head over to gyro.com for more info and get amongst your legends.
I was 19, broke, unemployed, and sold my girlfriend's canopy for drug money. So I thought I better sew her a new one. What a sentence and what a story. This describes the humble yet outrageous beginnings of NZ Aerosports, the home of Icarus Canopies, in the words of our founder himself. From getting a paratrooper toy from his mom, watching parachutes at the DZ as a six-year-old, jumping off the wharf with a parachute made from bedsheets, doing his first jump at 16, sewing his first canopy on a borrowed machine at 19, and starting to sell parachutes out of a garage in 1986, Paul Gyro Martin had an undying love for the sky. Our company started with one man with the wildest of spirits in a true blue sky dream, a renegade. In the time that Gyro created and ran the Icarus Canopies brand until he passed away in 2017, he pushed everything he had to its limits. We miss him and we always will. Gyro is the next generation of NZ Aerosports. It honors our founder, of course, because it was the name we all knew him by, but Gyro the rebrand also marks the start of a new chapter, our next jump. Gyro is the space between sound and silence, art and science, chaos and calm. Gyro is a state of epic tranquility that transcends understanding. That moment, in the door, in free fall, mid-swoop, where nothing but the present exists. A perfect balance of euphoria and thrill. Gyro captures our passion for flying and our commitment to designing break-the-fucking-rules canopies that deliver pilots pure, wild flight.
Hey gang, so I got a new book out. It's called The Upside of Fear, and it's exactly what you think it's about. It's about the good side of, well, getting scared. In it, we talk not only about the science and biology behind fear, but the psychology as well. And it's not just coming from me, it's coming from some of the best in the sport. Omar Al-Hijalon, Jeff Provenzano, Maxine Tate, and so many more have contributed their sometimes terrifying stories to the book to help you overcome your fear. So head to the lunaticfringepodcast.com. You're going to find the link to the book there, as well as the other books. It's available in ebook, paperback, hardback, and audiobook right now.
Coming straight from the cockpit, it's another episode of Lunatic Fringe with the fucking pilot.
Ready, set, go! Back in the can for another edition of the Lunatic Fringe podcast and a couple of smiling faces in the frozen north, although it's warming up now. Who the fuck are you guys and what do you do?
Yeah, well, my name's Dawson. I'm a trainer here at iFly Canada and also a big time skydiver. And we are in the process of kind of creating content to try to help the newer jumpers get into the sport of skydiving, get into the sport of indoor skydiving. And we are also representing Team Canada at the World Cup in Macau in just under 2 weeks now. So that's a little bit about me.
Yeah, well, I'm Ollie, Olivier Provost, if you're French. And, well, also big-time skydiver, I guess, but in the making. I started working at iFly in 2015, so tunnel instructing for a while now. And part of Team 9 Owls. And, yes, we love creating content, so... That's what we do.
You know, it's really cool, too, especially doing something that's gauged towards newer jumpers, because especially compared to when I started, there's so many more newer jumpers or flyers and so many more different inroads to the sport than there used to be, that there's a lot of love that needs to be shared.
Absolutely. They're the one who needs the most, the support, the You know, it's a, 80% of the flyers in any discipline, actually, they're the beginners. And so we, not because they're the most that we targeted them, but it's because they need the most love. So, sure.
Absolutely. And one of the big like catalysts to kind of the decision that came into play was like, I remember when I started jumping, it wasn't that long ago. It was like 2018 is when I started. We actually did our course together the same weekend. It just worked out like that. But it's like, man, you go online and you're like super horny to try to find all the information that you can find. You're looking up all this stuff and you're like trying, you know, you see a little bit here and you see a little bit over there. And we're like, man, there's not really one spot where you can kind of see the beginning to where you want to go. And we're like, man, there's a bit of a gap there. And unless you're going to the drop zone, you go to the tunnel and you have a coach that's like really laying it all out for you, it's not really easy to find on social media. So we're trying to kind of fill the gap that we found we had when we started. And that's kind of the goal. And that's where a lot of the inspiration came from.
Well, I mean, in a social media landscape now where if you Google skydiving, you're either going to get the new head down night jump record where to a non-jumper, it looks like fucking aliens, or you're going to get people base jumping off the Burj Khalifa. So there's not a whole lot of, hey, this is what jump two of your AFF is like.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah. I mean, see that and they're like,
those videos are out there, but nobody wants to watch them, right?
Yeah.
Try to find them too. They don't get a lot of views. They don't get a lot of you know, they're not out there that much.
Yeah.
So
nobody's you know, Cat 4 is going to go viral unless something went really wrong.
Yeah. You end up on Friday Freakout. And they're like, okay, here we go.
Yeah, pretty much. So before we get too deep into the weeds on what you guys are doing, let's talk about how you guys got started in it. Not necessarily in skydiving, but in anything that, you know, normal society thinks is maybe a little bent.
Yeah, well, I personally, I've always loved sport, always loved humans' performance. People doing cool shit always been what was the most interesting to me. So it's there was not one thing specific, one sports. I've done some a little bit of skating, a lot of snowboarding, rock climbing. I did a lot of that too. But in the end, it was not always so much about what I could do that impressed me, but what as a whole we can do. And so I've always loved extreme. I always loved the adrenaline, but it's what. Pushing the limits is what I see as the most impressive.
Sure.
All in all.
Yeah. And for me, like I kind of did all the sports growing up as a kid. I tried everything at least once. A big part of my kind of growing up, I played hockey coming from Canada. Obviously hockey was a big one for me. And
Gretzky, eh?
Yeah. 99. So I did that pretty competitively growing up. And then I did judo for a little while. So I competed in judo for a couple of years. But in the back of my mind, since I was a kid, I used to ask Santa Claus to fly for Christmas. My grandma tells this story all the time. I would be sitting in the car with her and be like, Grandma, I want to fly for Christmas. And so kind of slowly that 12, 13 age, I kind of found, you know, Dreamlines 4 on YouTube. And I was like, oh my God, like, that's it. That's what I want to do. And so I slowly figured my way out how to like reverse engineer. How do I get to that? And it was, okay, base jumping and wingsuiting. Both of those require skydiving. So I did my first skydive when I was 16 and I was like hooked instantly. I was like, oh yeah, this is unreal. And in the following year, I had the option to do another tandem or go to the tunnel. And I was like, oh man, well, it makes sense to go to the tunnel. I'll kind of figure out how to fly. And I went in there and I saw the instructor go up and I was like, man, one day I am going to do that. And it just worked out. The stars aligned. There was a tunnel that opened up 15, 20 minutes from my house. And I was able to go to university at the same time that I was able to start working at the tunnel. And so those kind of stars aligned. And then I got into the tunnel and that's where the whole thing began.
Now, what were you studying in university?
I did a major in accounting and a minor in finance.
Okay. So that's actually that's pretty good stuff to have in your back pocket if you're going to be spending all your cash on skydiving and tunnel flying.
Yeah. Well, it was funny when I was kind of going through that process. My dad's a nurse. And so I kind of had the idea of maybe, do I want to go into nursing and then maybe kind of go down the medicine route, kind of helping people. And then I'm like, man, that has fucking nothing to do with jumping out of a plane, like zero. So I was like, well, maybe if I do like a business degree, at least, you know, you can kind of learn a little bit more about how things work, how the world works, how money works. And I was like, well, I'll try that and kind of see where it goes. Sure. And so I went into school, and when I did my course, we had to do it in Oakville, which is about an hour drive from here. So you go to school in the morning from like, you know, 9 till 3, and then you'd wait till 7 o'clock, drive over to Oakville, train from 8 o'clock at night till 3 in the morning, drive home, sleep for a couple hours. So it was an intense first month, but I mean, I soaked it up. I was ready to go. I was so jonesing.
Well, you know, it's funny because the tunnel has now been an inspiration for a lot of generations of skydivers, myself included. When I was a kid, a lot like you, I was inspired by a lot of the things that I saw, especially in aviation. But I remember watching an old TV show. I believe the name was That's Incredible. And they had a section on the flyaway indoor tunnel in Las Vegas. And this show would have aired in the early 80s. And I remember watching this show going, oh my God, it's just people bouncing around this room. That looks like the most incredible thing. And then, of course, as a kid, you forget about it and life goes on. But a bunch of years later, I end up moving to Las Vegas, and it just so happened it was at the same time that they were having the grand reopening of that wind tunnel. I went and flew within the first month of it opening, was working there 2 months later, and that was kind of how it all began.
Yeah.
There you go.
Because they're so fucking cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So your grassroots started kind of more in the tunnel. Did you do that before you started skydiving as well?
Oh, yeah. I was the one of the original generations of tunnel rats, in that I knew how to fly in the tunnel before I was a jumper. So, and this was back in the day when skydiving was getting your license was a bit more up to your instructor. So I graduated AFF in 4 jumps. But I was by the time I did AFF, I was doing backflips off the wall in the tunnel, you know. So I was already competent in flying. They just wanted to make sure I could read an altimeter, open and fly my parachute. And so it was different back then. Obviously now you can't do that kind of thing, but the tunnel is still amazing prep if you want to go be a skydiver, because it does help to boil down the experience of skydiving to the mechanics of it, reading that altimeter, dealing with the equipment, dealing with emergencies, because flying your body, at least relatively, kind of takes a back seat to the rest of it.
Yeah,
absolutely. At the very least, it removed that pressure or that stress of being able to just get stable. And like you said, deploy, read your alt without spinning around. It relieves that fear of loss of control. So you have more headspace to focus on what really matters, which is saving your life at the end of the day.
Sure. Although I suppose that can be a double-edged sword, though, right? Because you get the tunnel rat mentality. We'll get out in the skydive and they fly incredibly well with their bodies, but they're just shit under canopy. But they've got the confidence because they know how to fly their bodies. That's not always the greatest thing.
Yeah.
And then it comes down to the individual. It's not because you know one part of it that you know it all, right? So it's never be too cocky, you know?
A skydiver being cocky? Fucking never.
No.
That shit's never happened. Never. No way.
No, never.
Well, it's cool too, because you'll have kind of people come in that haven't done any skydiving or any tunnel flying, and they ask about it. And it's nice to have those people come in, because then you can guide them to like, hey, at least get the basics, you know what I mean? The fundamentals of being stable and being competent on the belly. And it just removes that extra thing that you would have to learn while you're in the sky.
Sure.
I guess that double-edged sword definitely comes in when you got like, if you know you have those kids or those people with a lot of the money, they come in, they do like 20 hours and they're like, yeah. And then you're like, and then you send them to the drop zone and you're like, Sorry, have fun with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I vividly remember the tunnel was just starting to be used to try and correct problems here and there with AFF students back when I stopped flying actively in the tunnel and was just jumping full time. Of course, now that's morphed into this whole new world, of course. But now, before we get too deep into that, you guys, so you both went through your course basically at the same time, but you started tunnel flying as well. So when did the skydiving side of things really kick in?
For me, it took 2 years, actually. So I did my my FITP in 2015, and I've only jumped in early 2018. So it took me a little while before I really jump into it. But the only reason really at that time was finance. It was making way more sense to me to keep flying, to be in the tunnel as much as I can, instead of putting a lot of money into skydiving. I knew it would happen. The community is the same. I had a true desire for it, but I'm also someone who likes to take his time. I don't want to rush anything, and I knew that those skills would speed up my skydiving progression anyway, at least at the very least the free fall portion of it. And so I took my time, 2 years, almost three, before I started my my jumping career. And even at the early years of my skydiving career, I took it very, very, very slow. Again, finance was a real gatekeeper, but I was almost every weekend at Job Zone, either shooting videos, seeing people, enjoying the view, soaking up and being present. Sure. Even though I wasn't jumping that much.
You know, there's nothing wrong with taking your time, especially not in a sport that can be as unforgiving as both skydiving and tunnel flying. And you may have heard of a guy by the name of Ray Kubiak.
Yeah.
So Ray is a good friend of mine. He and I worked together in the wind tunnel in Las Vegas, and I think he waited almost 2 years before he made his first jump. And I know that because I worked with him in the tunnel and I shot the video on his first ever skydive.
Oh, nice.
So, I mean, and he's the OG ninja, you know, you don't get much better than Ray. And again, he was in no rush.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is really cool, because you can kind of get a sense of, you know, that people that kind of take their time, you know, they're going to listen, they're going to pay attention. You don't, that personality isn't super aggressive, which, you know, it's in one sense, it's quite nice, because then you're not so worried about that pushing the boundaries. It's like, okay, we're going to work our way through, take our time, do what we need to do.
Oh yeah. That makes me a lot less nervous than the AFF student that comes out and goes, I just want a base jump with a wingsuit. Like, oh, well, like, fuck. Yeah. Here we go. Yeah. All right. Yeah. You're on step 864 and you just showed up for step two, you know?
Yeah. And well, and Ray is, if I know correctly, in charge of the new flyaway, one of the people involved in the new flyaway project.
Yes,
in Tennessee.
He is.
Holy smokes, man. That looks unreal.
Yep.
I am so fired up to see those guys get that done. It looks amazing.
Yeah, I actually had them on the show when they did their big announce that they were going to be doing this, and they went over, they had a cutout of the actual building that they went through and the designs and everything. And,
yeah.
And, I mean, I've known Ray for 27 years, you know, and I've been able to watch this incredible progression that he's gone through and the sport and everything, and know that he's been pushing the forefront of it. So when they announced that they were taking over, you know, one of the two tunnels that I started my career in and turning it into like the place, I was pretty fucking blown away.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's really cool. We've actually had quite a few discussions about it. The fact that it's not just a tunnel and you have more than one, like the draw just becomes so much heavier
with
all of the other amenities. Like now they're even expanding that a little bit bigger than I think what I heard from the original designs. So like you're going to have, you know, a full fitness facility. You're going to have both tunnels. You're going to have one for sport flyers, one for first time flyers. You got the whole center on the outside that's going to be geared towards people that might not even know what the fuck's going on with a tunnel, right? And then all of a sudden they walk across the the venue and boom, oh my God, what's this? Like, I'm super excited for them.
One of their very vocal partners is fucking Travis Pastrana. I mean,
come on.
You know, I mean, the rumor that I heard was when they have opening day, they're going to have Pastrana and his boys fucking just throwing down out front. And yeah. I mean, it'll be exactly what people think it's going to be.
Which is what the indoor skydiving needs right now.
Sure. And the multi-disciplines in a tunnel is a really good thing too. Not just the two tunnels, but even like the operation that they've got here in Finland. Actually, they've got two in Helsinki, but one of them that's about an hour and a half outside has not just the tunnel, but they've got a massive wake park. So you can go surf. It's even more draw for those that might not be attracted to flying in the tunnel. It still gives accessibility for the two people that do and the five that don't. Now they're in the water and they're in the tunnel, and it becomes more of a destination, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Whoever had a shoulder dislocation up to the water park.
Exactly. So now how about you? How did your skydiving start?
Yeah, so I started in Whitby in February 2018. And so I ended up doing my course. It was May 2018. So I had about 4 or 5 months of experience in the tunnel. By that point, I could fly everything head down. And I remember the guys like just were poking fun so hard because I went in to use my time and I just went on my belly and I'm like, okay, like turns on my belly forwards. I'm like, I can fly everything. But I'm like, I was so nervous about going up to do the sky. I went and just did like 10 minutes on my belly to make sure it was all good. And ended up driving up to Montreal, did the AFF over the course of that weekend, and ended up doing 24 jumps. So I missed my A license by one jump that first season. And I was like, and I drove to the drop zone after school in like October. It was like freezing and the sun set too early. And I'm like, oh man. But, and then not 2 years after that, COVID happened. So I really went full tilt into jumping, and my jump numbers went up quite a bit during that COVID time. So I kind of went indoor skydiving super heavy focus, now kind of doing a little more of a 50-50, and it's going to start to go more into the jumping scene in the next little while. But that was kind of, that was my progression of getting into the sport.
And you guys both started working first in the tunnel, I assume, yeah?
Yeah. So I started in Whitby and did that up until COVID. That was my progression. But always
did the tunnel shut, or did COVID shut the tunnel down for you guys?
Yeah, very much.
Yeah, COVID wasn't friendly. So we fully closed for 2 years, and all of the tunnels in Canada were franchise owned. And then during COVID, there was some finance stuff filed for bankruptcy. So iFly International came and took that over. So it was almost a full 2 years. It was like 21 months of closure for us. And we weren't allowed to step in the building at all. So there was no flying in the tunnel for 2 years.
Wow, that's quite the break right there.
Yeah, it felt like a dream. It still feel a little weird to have that gap in the whole progression. It went from full time working the tunnel for the last 6 years almost to nothing, and there was a lot of promises to reopen after a couple months, after a couple more months. And it just kept going until, like you said, 21 total.
Yeah, it was like 21 months. We closed in March and opened in January. So it was, like 21, 22 months.
Yeah. So that happened.
Yeah.
I mean, COVID was fucked, man. It really, yeah. I often try and think of what might have happened had COVID not come around. Where would I be? What would I be doing? Because it just shifted gears for everything.
Yeah,
it was and like I said, in Canada, it was particularly like intense, the shutdown period. So it really was kind of like everyone was full stop. And then, you know, a lot of big changes. Even the jumping scene was, thankful enough, we were able to jump in kind of like June, that first 6 months, because of the aviation laws and stuff like that. But even you saw a big shift in who was jumping and who was not jumping. There was a lot of kind of people that moved out, but there was also a massive influx of people like, man, what am I going to do? I got all this time on my hands, fucking boom, get in. So there was a big shift in even the in our scene specifically here that we recognized in terms of who's coming in, who's coming out. And now we're also noticing a big trend where people are starting to not hang around at the drop zone every weekend and stay at your drop zone. It's a lot more, okay, where's the events happening? Where are the camps happening? And then everyone kind of migrates. And because it's quite a small scene in Canada, like we get people from Ontario and we'll all go up to Montreal and we'll jump in Montreal for a weekend. And then we all come back to another drop zone in Ontario and we all jump here. So we're really starting to see the community kind of unify, but then we kind of move around and it's not so much like, I'm going to be here every single weekend. It's not playing out quite that way anymore, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, I was going to say that doesn't necessarily sound like a bad thing unless you're the one operating the drop zone that nobody showed up at. Because it sounds like rotating house parties. All right, everybody, we're at Bill's house this weekend and we're at Jerry's next weekend. And
I think for some of the drop zones, they're kind of like, yeah, get the fuck out. We don't need you guys here right now. They're like, let's make our money back with all the tandems. Get that stuff in.
Which isn't necessarily a bad thing either. I mean, that was the one thing that I noticed. I was flying in Dubai when it all hit. And when they lifted the restrictions and we were able to start operating, we were insanely busy with tandems because nobody could travel and everybody had all their vacation money that they had nowhere to go spend. So they just came and gave it to us. And I flew my fucking ass off once I got back in the plane. It was insane.
Yeah.
No, there was some good happening because of COVID. One thing that I've noticed though or heard is funny enough, before COVID, it was mandatory to go to the tunnel for most job zones. I want to say all of them here. There was like a 10 to 15 to 20 minutes designated to going in the tunnel with your coach, the one who's going to be in the sky with you. And there were some mixed feeling about that at the drop zone. Some people were saying, you don't need the tunnel. It's in the sky. You need to jump. And then COVID happened, tunnel shut down. And now the coaches mentions are more vocal about, well, it feels like the level dropped a little bit. Maybe the tunnel wasn't so bad for beginner flyer for the getting that sole license. That first, let's say, 25 jump period, the tunnel had an impact. And now that they were missing it, they were realizing what they were missing on. So,
oh, absolutely.
Interesting.
I mean, I was an AFF instructor when the tunnel was a rarity with a student. You barely ever have students that had ever gone through the tunnel. And sometimes it was fucking gladiator games. I mean, it was just a day after day of near-death experiences. And you're like, Jesus Christ, man, this is hard. So the tunnel is obviously an incredible help. But there is the old guy in me that remembers I had to learn how to free fly 45 seconds at a time. So fuck you guys. So I was that transitional part of the transitional generation in that I remember both of them. Like I had to do it the old way, but I was also tasting the new way as well. So it was, it's kind of fun to see the change.
I have mad respect when I see someone who progressed in the sky and is just a shredder, mad respect for it, because it's a very small chunk of time to learn how to control yourself. And then it's a big chunk of time before you can get back into it. So kudos to those guys. I'm very grateful for the tunnel, for what it gives, the opportunity it offers, but it used to be different. And
I learned how to free fly watching videos of Olav Zipser and Omar El Hijalon delivering pizza, and doing all that. And that's how I learned how to free fly. And cut to many years later, I'm good friends with Omar now. And of course, he progressed right along with the sport that he helped to pioneer. And he eventually obviously transitioned into the tunnel where he could refine things, because let's face it, you got a lot more working time in a tunnel than you do in a skydive.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The density of skill is just so, you can just practice so much more that, like you said, 45 seconds, then you land, then you pack, Then you wait for a load. Then you get in the plane. Then you climb up. Then you jump out. And you're like, oh, fuck. Yeah. Oh, there's 10 seconds gone. Oh, shit. Oh, look at my altitude.
I can't even count how many jumps that I told myself, don't forget the lesson you learned on the last jump until you're on the next jump going, fuck, I forgot the lesson I learned on the last jump. God damn it. You know, and then it just keeps going and going and going.
But it's really interesting, too, because there's like you like from my perspective, like I hear these stories. And I've never experienced that firsthand. Like my only experience is the one that I have of knowing how to fly and then learning. And I'm like, man, like I was shitting my pants. Like I knew how to fly. I get out of the plane. I'm like sweating. I'm like shaking on the door and I'm like swimming out. And then I'm like, oh my God, wind. And so it was like, I can't even imagine being in that state and then not even knowing how to do that first part. I'm just like, it's crazy. The, like I said, how much more was involved in that process, but sure. I'm definitely glad that experience was had for people so that at least we know, you know, like you can see both sides and then pick the path that's going to be good for you. Right.
The great thing too, that as it's moved forward, I am thrilled with watching the progression and seeing people with dramatically less experience and a tons less jumps than me fly 10 times better. And I don't think that that's a bad thing. I think it's an amazing thing. You know, I mean, I earned a different kind of flying than they're earning. And eventually 10 years, 15 years down the road, somebody else is going to come along and those guys are going to be going, are you fucking kidding what these guys are doing now?
Yeah.
You know, but I love seeing that. And I love seeing these people absolutely shredding. And of course it's gotten to the point where I'll watch really talented tunnel flyers and no longer be able to identify what they did to make something happen. That's when I knew shit changed, because it wasn't I can see he dug his knee in and did this and that. Now it's they're fucking barely tweaking an ankle and all this weird shit's happening. And I'm like, all right, fuck, man, I don't get it anymore. Yeah. And it's fun.
Absolutely. And it's just that, like, we've talked about this quite a bit, but like the sport, relatively speaking, it's so young. It's still in like the infancy stage compared to all of the other sports that we have. So like that envelope getting pushed, it's really cool to see that cycle happen so quickly. You know, every 5-10 years, there's just boom, there's another thing that happens, and then boom, there's another thing that happens.
The other great thing too is you'll find yourself in the tunnel or on a load with one of your heroes, who is only two generations before you in skydiving, which, let's face it, a generation in skydiving is quite small these days because there's so many more people coming in. But, you know, to find myself flying the airplane with Olav on the back, or I've got somebody like Jeff Provenzano, you know, on board, or I'm watching all these amazing things going, oh, these are just my people. They're just fucking better at this than me.
But they're in the same plane.
Yeah.
It's so important to be open to those changes, to those changes of level and changes in progression. Like you said, the sport is so new. If we get stuck into the mentality of we got it, we got it, this is how it's supposed to be. Of course, like there's the common knowledge, there's the basics, but it's so important to be open to change and to be welcoming those new guys. If someone is 20 years younger, can shred but have no idea how to fly a canopy, he's great his way. And so the whole mentality of getting stuck into thinking this generation got it all figured out, we don't.
Absolutely. Well, and that's the cool thing, right? As you get more experienced in anything, you realize how much more you have to learn, always. You know, absolutely. I mean, so it's refreshing too for a lot of the people that I'll have tune into the show, find the show through a Facebook page called the Beginner Skydiving Forum, which has 75,000 members, 80,000 members. And granted, a lot of them are people that have gone out and done a tandem and they dip their toe into the world and they're not going to become skydivers, but they love the idea of it and they love the stories that are being told. But even if there's, 10% of the 80,000 people on that one Facebook group, that's a fuckload of new skydivers that are listening in and hearing, oh, These guys were nervous. These guys have problems with this. These guys had to learn these things, and they're the ones saying there's so much more to come. I'm not coming into something where everybody's perfect. I'm coming into something where everybody's still learning. And that's an amazing thing to know you're getting into.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one of the cool things too is with the progression of you know, that skill of flying coming in, there's almost a new problem that we have, not a new problem, but a new opportunity to add context to that beginner portion of the course. Like when I started, you know, I knew how to fly, but I mean, I didn't know how to do an exit. I didn't understand the distance and the approach to getting somewhere. I didn't understand, you know, like I see someone here and I'm like, I don't go there because I'm gonna bomb them, right? And understanding that approach and getting on levels and then breaking off and then understanding like, oh my God, there's canopies around me. So like you have, you know, this kind of super narrow view that people have because they know how to fly. And you have to now try to think, okay, well, the issue is not the flying, it's the opening up that vision for people. So it's like every time there's an envelope, you gotta kind of recheck that baseline. All right, what are the things that might need to kind of add or change, or we need to put specific focus on? And that's a really cool thing too, because you can even learn from the beginning again, which
sure.
I think is a really cool thing.
Well, and in general, most people are exposed to it with very broad strokes, right? You know, they understand the basics of free fall. They're given the body position. They're given the basics of what's going to be needed. And it's usually just the one-on-one with their instructors where they get the, all right, so when you're going to come in and take a dock with me, you're going to be doing this. Or when, so they're giving that minutiae and the detail. And a lot of people want to be able to dig into that kind of stuff before they even get going, which I'm assuming is kind of the spark to the idea of what you guys are doing now, right?
Yeah, it's a big portion of it. We're trying to create the content as if we were getting into the sport. So very much like the first series that we're doing right now, we've called it Journey to A, to kind of hit that very first progression of skydiving. And then it's like, okay, what's the next thing? What are the things that you should look out for? What are the things that you're going to need to know once you have that A license? And our goal is to try to build the content as someone would progress in that sport. And we'll try to hit those important pieces that you need to know at each kind of new level. And that's the idea that we're trying to kind of go into.
Now, how is this set up? How have you got things organized for this?
Organized chaos. Organized chaos is there's definitely a science to the madness, but it's mostly madness to be honest. We first of all, it's important to mention that we started this project almost 4 years ago, and now it's coming out. So there was COVID play a massive role in it. It really made things weird, but it's. We planned what we would like to be doing in 5 years. And we've, like you said earlier, we reverse engineered. Where do we start to get there? And what are the steps? And so he said it very perfectly. We want to produce a content as the normal progression would be like. So that's how we're thinking, and then all of it is time and effort.
Compare it to say I want to learn how to play guitar and I've never touched a guitar, your lessons are going to start from this is the direction the guitar faces when you're playing. This is the hand you hold it with. This is the way to attach a strap to the guitar. You're breaking it down from the beginning and moving forward.
Yeah. So, and just as a quick sidebar, so Ollie started working at the tunnel in Montreal and he moved to Whitby. And that's where we kind of got together. And the idea was to form a team in indoor skydiving. And we kind of wanted to remake the IBA videos. That's where like the whole thing started. But then COVID happened and we're like, okay, let's pivot. Let's start with skydiving instead. And so what we did was we kind of looked through all of the different manuals in USPA and CSPA, because those are kind of the two that we're most familiar with. And we wanted to provide an additional resource that would complement what you would learn in your course. Mm. We do not want to replace what anyone's learning in the course. We just want to give something that's a little bit more entertaining. We wanted to provide that cool cinematic storytelling in combination with something that you're going to learn so that it's more digestible, so that you're like excited to watch it and not like, is this over yet? You know what I mean? We didn't want that. Oh, yeah. So what we did was we took, okay, what do you need for your A license? And we basically started with the main topics. So we had, you know, what kind of gear do you need to skydive? How do you plan a skydive? What are emergency procedures and how do those work? How do you dirt dive? How do you do the free fall maneuvers? How do you do the canopy maneuvers? How do you deploy parachute? How do you, what is jump run? What is spotting? Like what are those things? And we kind of explain that topic pretty high level. And then we go into a little bit more detail and we try to fit that in with some B-roll stuff to show actually what that subject is about. And it goes all the way through to debriefing the jump. So from the gear that you need all the way to getting through everything that you would do in a jump to debriefing, that's kind of the first 12 episodes for this one season. And that's the goal. And then we'll progress through. So for example, you know, you get into tracking. So there's going to be a whole bunch of different things for tracking. There's going to be one for, you know, starting to do formation skydiving, one for getting into free fly. So that's kind of how we do it. General overview of the different subjects at that skill level, and then break it down with a little bit more context.
Well, so that's kind of the formula. It's a great idea, really, because I'm sure, like most people, I'll find something that I see a little interest in, and if there's good information out there, I binge the hell out of it, whether I'm actively doing it at that point or not. That way, I not only get enjoyment out of, hey, that looks really cool, I want to know more about it, but you're preparing yourself if you actually go do it, and you have a hell of a lot better grasp to what's this getting thrown out of an airplane shit about.
Yeah.
One of my biggest hope is that someone, beginner skydiver, go on our YouTube channel, check the Journey to A series, and expect 3 videos covering all the concept they need to get that first license, and realize, holy smokes, there's so many different concepts, there's so many aspects to skydiving. And so in some sense, we don't want to shy away from telling people it's going to be difficult. There's a lot to learn, and you better get introduced to those concepts as early as possible. In the end, more information is more good information. Let's point out is better than none. And so we've divided those episodes into concepts. And it's like you mentioned, not the goal is not to replace any coaching. This is not what it's meant to be. We want to introduce people to those concepts, to those different bits of a skydive, basically.
Sure.
And then they hear the concept, then they can go to their coach and be, so I've watched this on YouTube. What do you think about it? And then there you go. You've never heard what is a Well, hopefully you've heard about a gear check, but oh, in his gear check, he did that. What do you think? Oh, yeah, that's right. That's good. Here's how I do it.
If nothing else, it potentially gets people to ask questions, which is always a good thing.
You know,
I mean, first off, I completely agree with you. There's no time too early to give someone all the information in regard to skydiving. Nothing needs to come as a shock to them. I would have tandem students that would come out to do a jump and we'd joke around and have fun. And eventually a lot of them would always say, but we couldn't really die on this. Like, it's going to be okay, right? And my response would be, oh, we could totally die on this. Like, this could be the last cup of coffee you're ever fucking going to have. Do I think that's going to happen? No. But it could. Yeah. You need to go into this knowing that this shit can happen. And like I say, I moderate on the beginner skydiving forum, and the response that I give more than any other is, you can ask that question and I'll give you my tips and tricks, but you need to take everything that I and everybody else say with a grain of salt and go to your instructor. This is supplemental information that you need to take to somebody who's going to sit down with you and knows what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So important.
And just to add on that too, like, obviously we come from a tunnel background. So our focus is a little bit more on flying. So we spend a little bit more time on the free fall and the exit and the canopy kind of maneuvers. But our hope is that if a coach is lacking a resource, you know, they just have that little stick guy, well, they could use the clip in that video to be like, hey, this is the back loop. And we show people how to do a back loop on the ground to conceptualize that. How do you practice it on the ground for it to make sense? And then show what it looks like in the sky as well. So it's like, if you're a coach and maybe you don't have the resources that you're looking for, you can just have this clip. You can screen record it on your phone, save it there. You have a student comes in, is like, hey, I need to work on back loops. And you're like, oh, perfect. Let me pull up my phone. I have a video that's just for you. And they can look at that, right? And people can save it and they can share it.
And then they can dissect it.
And, sure. And that's our hope, is to provide that for people too.
Well, one of the places that I did AFF for, we had different instructors that had different levels that they were incredible at teaching. Some would be great in the beginning, but start to slide a little bit when it got to more of the release jumps and stuff. And so another instructor would step in, or one instructor just doesn't vibe quite as well on a specific subject as another one does. And it's always great to be able to go, hey, you know something? I'm probably not the best person to teach you this, but that guy is, or she's amazing at this kind of stuff. And sounds to me like your videos would be just another resource for an instructor to be able to go, hey, maybe this description is going to sit in your head better than the way I can put it. Because everybody learns a different way, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. And when we create those videos, we're not just skydivers. We're not just coaches. We're not just, I'm a personal trainer. It all combines together, and it's also the audience for who we are creating those. A beginner skydiver could watch it and, you know, learn and develop, but also a coach could be watching it and learn and progress and share. And so it really is meant to be for everyone and anyone, really. There's no level or there's no position. We're trying to not be too general, but we're also trying to be as inclusive as we can to help anyone Sure. who could be stumbling across our content.
Well, I'd like to think that there hasn't been any level in which I haven't learned something off of another instructor, seen a way that they did it that worked a little bit better, and vice versa, that I've got a way of teaching or doing something that's a bit more streamlined or easier to wrap your head around for somebody else. You know, I mean, again, everyone learns differently. Some people need to be told you need to do A, B, C, D, and E, and other people need to be, you know, slid into it gradually. You just got to figure out who you're working with. And something like that kind of gives them the option to find their own lane.
Yeah. And you have, like I said, you have like the engineer that comes in that's like, man, I need you to break down every single thing and explain each little piece. And then you have the guy that's like, I don't want to hear a word come out of your mouth. Just show me what it looks like and I'll figure it out. Like, okay.
Oh man, that's I used to love the military guys because they just wanted you to tell them what to do and they'd go do it and they'd get to the ground. Do you know why all that happened? I don't care. I don't know. I did. You tell me, I do it. It worked. That's all I fucking need to know. So you've spent 4 years, I guess, developing this now. You said you guys have got your first season out now.
We posted the third episode yesterday. Nice. So it's 12 to 15, because we're not even through. We're 12 to 15 episode for that first season. And we just started six weeks ago to post. So a long time coming project, a lot of background work. But here we are.
Yeah. And then the goal will be, skydiving is going to be the first one, but then our goal will be to do the same thing for the tunnel. And we're going to try to build those up kind of together so that the content will kind of match each other, right? So whether you're in the beginning stages of the tunnel or you're in the beginning stage of the skydive, you'll be able to kind of progress through on either side. And that's kind of the route that we're taking.
And to that, I would like to add, the tunnel is one thing, the flying is one thing, and the fitness is the platform, the solid ground that unites it all. In the end, a healthy body, a healthy mind will provide. So in that second, let's say, series that we're working on, we want to include a lot of fitness tips and tricks and to combine all of it together. It's one thing that we see too often. Skydivers are not always looking and performing like pro athletes. They not always have the most and the best healthy lifestyle.
You don't say.
It comes with the territory, but we want to also lead by example. We've just enrolled in some marathons and some other fitness related, health related projects. So it's definitely going to be a lot more about the body in the tunnel. Yeah. Outside of the tunnel too.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is if you're healthier in cardio, altitude's not going to affect you as much. You're going to be able to handle those stressful situations better. Strength training means you're going to be able to do what needs to be done, whether it be holding those grips or flaring that tandem. You know, I had a good friend that wanted to get her tandem rating many, many years ago, and she couldn't flare the damn tandem. So I spent months with her training her on how to strengthen her upper body and triceps to be able to manage a tandem flare. And then, of course, you have to teach the finesse involved, but you still have to have the muscle. Finesse only gets you so far. Muscle only gets you so far. It's got to be a meeting of the two.
Software and hardware. Yeah. You know, you have to have the program, but you have to have the CPU to run it. It is what it is.
Without a doubt.
And with the tunnel, I mean, let's not kid ourselves, skydiving and tunnel flying, it's expensive. So the more work you can do outside to make that as efficient as possible will also benefit and save you money in the long run, right? Because if you physically can't get past here, well, you know, it's going to be kind of hard to figure out how to fly on your back.
You will learn to compensate, but you will always be in that zone of compensation because of your inabilities or your physical limitation.
Sure.
So
it's gotta all come together without a doubt. So now people have heard what the plan is and what's going on. How do they find you? How do they find the YouTube site? How do they find you guys specifically if they want to come fly with you in the tunnel? All that stuff.
Buddy Flight Spotlight on YouTube, on Instagram. That is the place to go, and that can lead you to all the side little stories and quests. Personally, Oli Pro Flyer on Instagram, that's my username.
Yeah, I'm DVWSONNN, so it's Dawson with a V instead of an A and three N's at the end. And in terms of the tunnel, so we currently work out of iFly Whitby. But the best way to do that, if people want to come fly with us, is to send us a message on Facebook or send us a message on Instagram. And we kind of post all of our stuff through there. So if we're doing events or we're doing camps and stuff like that, it'll all be through the Facebook platform is usually kind of where everyone goes the most. But yeah, Body Flight Spotlight on YouTube is where you guys can find out all that stuff.
Awesome. And before I let you go, we'll finish it off by you telling me you guys are getting ready for a big competition in 2 weeks. I forgot to ask about that. So tell me.
Yeah.
Don't remind us.
Yeah. So we had our Canadian Indoor Skydiving Championships in November. And so we placed second, but we won the Canadian titles because the Fanatics came and visited us and just absolutely destroyed everyone. But we still got to represent Canada. So we're going to go represent Canada at the World Cup of Indoor Skydiving, which is going to be in Macau from April 16th to 19th. And we're going to be going there and competing in dynamic two-way. So we're flying out in just over a week and a half. And we got a free routine that is still in the works and hopefully it's ready by the time we get there. And then we'll be doing our speed rounds too. So that's coming up quickly. So we're really excited about that.
Watch out for the gray and red suits.
Yeah.
That's incredible. I mean, I wish you all the best of luck in the competition. I wish you incredible luck with the series, and I hope that it does everything that you're hoping it does. I know it can be hard to finally get a project like that up and running, but it sounds like you guys are there, and hopefully it's nothing but good things to come.
Thank you. Thank you so very much.
Well, thank you for reaching out and inviting us here. It was a really cool chat. And
it was awesome.
Really fun to get to talk to you and get to know a little bit more about everything.
Absolutely, gentlemen. Thank you so much. You guys have an awesome day and we'll catch up soon.
Absolutely.
Thank you. You too.
Well, there you have it. Another episode of the Lunatic Fringe podcast brought to you as always by, well, wait, not as always, actually. Brought to you now by Gyro. Formerly known as Enziero Sports, you'll head to gyro.com for their next level line of canopies. By Pussfoot, the Extreme Sports Collective. Head over to pussfoot.com to check it out. By Summit Parachute Systems, check out summitparachutesystems.com to talk to Jarrett Martin and the gang about kick-ass pilot rigs, rigging courses, and more. By Flyaway Indoor Skydiving, go to flyawaytn.com and check out all the cutting-edge stuff to come. By Pure Spectrum CBD, head to purespectrumcbd.com to check out their wide range of CBD products. And as for us, head to the lunaticfringepodcast.com to listen to any of the hundreds of episodes currently available, hit the link for our YouTube channel, pick up your copy of the Lunatic Fringe book or The Accidental Stripper, and get a sneak peek at upcoming guests. Once again, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Damn.